So how is your practice going? It's completely disturbed by all these activities going on. Now Pierre has to still do his visa. One more visa run to Udon and then he's finished for 1 year. Yeah, Richard has to fill out his passport or apply to the passport. And then once matters are done, I mean, we have to get all everything. Going down to Bangkok, going to Udon, going here, going there, you know, just to get your visa. You have to get into samadhi. There's no other option. I mean, cut out the thoughts, you know, you have the best word or best mantra for it, you know. Just replace every thought that comes with Buddha. I mean, normally during the day, if there's nothing going on, I mean, you have the whole day for doing that. Each thought that comes up, replace with Buddha. I mean, you want to get to the quietude of the mind. Don't just want to hang around, you know, living in the world that you think or that you that you imagine. I mean, that's nothing different from the world. That's not the reason why we became monks. Just living in our imagination or interpretation of what the world is and what the nature of things is. That's not going to work. I mean, if you want to find freedom from dukkha, I mean, then we have to cut down on the views, on the wrong views. I mean, the Lord Buddha talks very often about wrong views and right views. Wrong views can lead you to hell and right views can lead you to heaven. Karma is the principle that rules this universe, and karma is really difficult to explain. The Lord Buddha said there are few, even if you become an arahant, that doesn't mean that you understand, you fully understand the laws of karma. How karma is reacting, somebody does something good and still ends up in hell. Somebody does good and ends up in heaven. Somebody does bad, you know, and ends up in heaven, and somebody does good and ends up in hell. Or somebody does good and ends up in heaven. I mean, it's not explainable. Just, you know, by looking at things, this will lead to this or this will lead to that. If you think about one life, if you think about multiple lives, yes, then it's true. If you do bad action, that will lead to the deprived areas. That will be true. It might not be in the next life, but it might be in a future life. And if you have some good karma that prevents it, then we will get the retribution of karma in one of the human lives. But mostly it is like, you know, for instance, the example of a very stingy person. Not only, you know, stinginess is not against one of the five precepts, but stinginess leads to breaking the five precepts. So, I mean, in normal cases, I mean, first of all, he goes to hell. The next birth is becoming a ghost, a hungry ghost. And then when he comes back in a human form, then he will be in a poor state. He will be born as a poor person. That's just the result of stinginess. It leads to a lot of things. So I mean, having these things, having these kind of bad mental states, I mean, will always lead to bad results, sooner or later. But to completely understand it was only possible for the Lord Buddha and very, very few of the Arahants, who exactly knew what kind of karma he had up his sleeve, so he could predict where he is going to go. I remember one of the suttas, you know, where the queen, I think it was King Bimbisara, you know, had just one lie and sexual misconduct with a puppy dog, and that led her after death, because she was regretting that, to hell for 7 days. Just this, one lie, one sexual misconduct. And now that we have become monks, we not only have the 5 precepts, but we have the 227 precepts. And the same thing holds true. If you go against the 227 precepts as monks, we will end up just like the lay people, in a deprived state. So, I mean, you have to be utterly careful with the precepts. You have to be utterly aware of what is going on. I mean, I found the 2 volumes Vinaya Mukha. I mean, that is something that you should read in your first panta. It's the rules for the monks. Not the Western interpretation, but it's a Thai. And that is the standard normally followed by the Dhammayutra tradition.
It's better to read this than just the canon?
Yes. Because the canon is a translation. I mean, wherever there is translation, there are errors. Wherever there is translation, it's not. I mean, there is no one-to-one translation. I mean, even in the simple languages like German or English, there is no one-to-one translation. It's always the interpretation. I mean, if the translator understands the subject that is talking about, you know, then it's most accurate translation. If the translator doesn't understand the subject that is talked. It's talked about, you know, then it's a mistranslation. And that certainly happens with an old language like Pali or Sanskrit. I mean, it's a misinterpretation. Lots of it doesn't exist. These words doesn't exist. One has to interfere from the occurrences in the script, how often it is mentioned, in what kind of context it is mentioned. That's probably what it means. But in our case, it is not necessary. Because we have Lungpu Man, who laid out the Vinaya, Dhamma and Vinaya for the forest tradition. So I mean, if you follow the Dhamma and Vinaya of Lungpu Man, or follow the Dhamma and Vinaya of Lungda Mahapur, then we will be on the safe side. And that is the only hope. Because there have been Arahants, and they know what is proper and what is not proper, what is beneficial and what is not beneficial. What is good action and what is bad action? What leads to liberation and what does not lead to liberation? And within his teaching, within his way of conduct, within his way of behavior, I mean, he has demonstrated it to us or to his disciples, and they indeed have demonstrated it to us. But also in this lineup of disciples, I mean, of course there will be misinterpretation. Some disciples do it like this, other disciples understand it like this. So, I mean, there will be always error. So, in the end, I mean, the only thing you will have to do is to find your inner wisdom, to find the guidance of Lungpu Man who is still within you, or can be within you, or the guidance of the Lord Buddha, or the guidance of Lungda Mahapur, who is still in your heart. If you really want whoever you have faith in, you know, just call him up and tell him help. Don't think that you understand something. Because that's where you go wrong. The moment we think we understand something, the moment we interpret something, or we form a conclusion, that's where we go wrong. The heart that is completely free of any views, of any kind of understanding, that's the only thing that can know. And once you know, I mean, you don't have to learn it. You know it. And you know it for the rest of your life. And that is very different, you know, from reading books, you know, where you understand it the moment of reading and the moment you close it, misunderstanding comes up. Ah, well, what did it say? Was it like this? Was it like that? I mean, that is not Dhamma. Dhamma is just, it's clear or not clear. You understand it or you don't understand. Sorry, in English we have only understanding. Yeah? Understanding is normally taken by the mind. So let's rephrase it and says we know it or we don't know it. And be perceptive. Huh? I mean, if you're not perceptive, if you're not able to observe things, huh, be it in your practice or be it in the monastic routines, I mean, what kind of use is it? You have to be able to observe with an open mind. The moment you think, he's doing this like this, you know, that is not observing, that is already interpreting. Just be open, you know, just open the mind and observe. Have no views, have nothing, you know, just have a clear mind. I know, I mean, it's easy said and it's so difficult to do. And that's why we need to have our samadhi, to be able to observe with an open mind. Samadhi is of utmost importance and is the most difficult thing for us, especially, you know, when we come from the Western tradition who only relies on thinking. Thinking like this, thinking like this, interpreting like this, and now we understand. Yeah? What have you understood? Ask yourself the moment, you know, if you ask yourself with an open mind, you know, what have I understood? Instantly the answer comes nothing. It just comes up. Instantly, you know, with an open mind, nothing. Because you really have nothing understood. What do I know, you know? Ask your heart, you know, with an open mind. What do I know? Nothing. But we behave like we know everything. Don't we? And that leads us into trouble. Because that's where the kilesas operate. In the state we know this and we know that, or we assume this or we assume that. That leads us to trouble. So I mean, be observant, you know, be mindful, be aware all day long. And I mean, this is the perfect opportunity. This is the perfect place to be able to do that. Now that we have most of our businesses dealt with, you know, I mean, now we have time, you know, to dive into practice. And just be, you know, just be on the Changram path of being, sitting, meditation, you know, just be in a state of don't know mind. Don't know. If you think you know something, just ask yourself, don't. What do I know? And instantly the answer comes up, I don't know. I don't know nothing. I don't understand anything. Because the I is the thing that understands. The I is the ego. And the ego is something that we have to let go. People don't understand it. The ego is that causes the problem. I want. I will. Or in other terms, you know, just the form, just the word will. In English and in German, it's the same thing. Will. That causes dukkha. That is the origin of dukkha. I want to do, I don't want to do. And that's the same thing for will. You know, will has want something to do or not wanting to do. I mean, see, you know, the translation, the normal translation is desire. Some people say, I don't have any desires. But they still have a will. See, all these translations, you know, lead to misunderstandings because they cannot be expressed in a language that doesn't have Dhamma. They can only be expressed in a language, you know, that has Dhamma-related, you know, words or symbols. And that's why we misunderstand things. Because we have an interpretation, you know, even if we speak the same language, you know, we still have misunderstandings because our interpretation or our mindset about this word, you know, means something completely different than another person. So we argue about this. No? All these things that cannot, you know, of course about things that are very, that can be physically, you know, completely described, I mean, we cannot have an argument. But things, you know, especially our feelings, emotions, you know, our thoughts, our views, our opinions, you know, all these things are very, very, very vague. And because we're using words, we think the other person is the same thing, you know? Thinks the same way. And that's why we get into misunderstanding. So how can it not be, you know, if you read Dhamma? How can we not have misunderstanding? It's not easy to understand something properly. No? And that's why the Lord Buddha taught us the way, you know. Even if we don't understand something, he gave us some guidelines. No? He gave us the guidelines, you know, for the path that leads out of suffering, you know, as keep the precepts. No? Be it the 5 precepts for the layperson, or be it the 227 precepts for the monk. No? Keep the precepts, train yourself in samadhi, and develop wisdom. Not develop wisdom, you know, in the way of the Western world. Huh? Are there other planets with other life? Huh? That's not the wisdom that we want to develop, because that is just knowledge. Huh? And all our knowledge, you know, is derived, you know, by all the things that we have known. Knowledge comes from knowing. Huh? Known, you know, to be like this, you know, our parents taught us this. This tree is called like this, and that tree is called like that. That's this kind of flower, that's that kind of flower. I mean, that is knowledge. When we look at the tree, you know, with an open mind, all what we see is maybe not even a tree. But we understand the meaning of it. But because we use all these symbols, I mean, they are the ones who hide all these. Hide the complete truth. A tree, you know, you can call a tree a mountain, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a symbol, it's just a description, and it doesn't say a lot about it. So the use of our language, you know, and especially when we come from West, you know, where it's predominant, I mean, where we have trained ourselves, you know, for at least 16 to 20 years, you know, just educating ourselves in this language, you know, in describing things accurately. I mean, all of this we have to forget. We have to forget the science. We have to forget, you know, when we read a lot of about the suttas of the Lord Buddha, we have to forget. I mean, we have to dive into the unknown. And that's why we need samadhi, you know, to reach to the state of knowingness. That is different from the knowing that we normally call, oh, I know it, I've seen it, and that's why I know it. It's similar. We've seen something inside, and that's why we know. We have understood something inside the heart. So, I mean, we have to find the path, you know, to this knowingness. We have to find the path to our heart. And what hinders us on the path to our heart is our ego. It's ourself. It's what we call, you know, when you look about your thoughts, no? I mean, in each thought there is the I. I'm like this, I'm not like this, I want this, I don't want this, you know. It's always the I. It's the ego. And when you look at the results, you know, an arahant doesn't have an I. identity. And because he doesn't have an identity that wants this or doesn't want this, huh? That's why he's free of dukkha. So, you think with views and opinions you get to this state of non-I, non-ego? The more opinions you have, the more you plucked your path. The less opinions and views you have, I mean, the more the path is open. So, don't assume anything. Don't interpret things. You know, just look. Huh? Observe. You know, the closer you observe, you know, the better. But, I mean, that is something, you know, I see. It still doesn't work. I mean, some of you have been here over a year, other bees have been closely to a year, you know. You still don't have the facility to observe, you know, truly observe. I mean, how can you not know if you truly observe? And I do sometimes test, you know, put my flashlight on my qigong, you know, just to. Well, what is it? It has nothing to do. I mean, I'm only supposed to carry his qigong, you know, back to his kuti. You know? So he leaves the flashlight, you know, wherever it has been. You know? Ah! That's not being, you know, that's not being intelligent in the way of Dhamma. Being in intelligence, you know, being observant. Observing, you know, how things are done. Being observant also, you know, being a servant, you know, observant. And being a servant, you know, to others. I mean, it's something, you know, so difficult for us. Because in the West, everyone is the same. There's nobody higher than us and there's nobody lower than us. And the moment we become monks, you know, actually, you know, the hierarchy is back. There's this Avuso Panta that was born by the Lord Buddha, you know, that was implemented by the Buddha. The one who ordained first is the Bante, and the one who ordained later is the Avuso. And always the Avuso has to give respect to the Bante, no matter how he is. That's a form of hierarchy, or that's a form of respect within the Buddhist religion, or the Buddhist order. And it makes sense. I mean, if he cannot serve other people, how can we get rid of the ego? Because that's the only thing that that prevents us from serving other people. And just by believing, you know, thinking, you know, that's the way and that's not the way, this I should do and that I shouldn't do, you know. If we follow this, where do we end up? Do we end up in a state of egolessness? If I follow my own will, if I can't submit, you know, if I can't submit to a higher authority, how can I get rid of ego? And when I can't get rid of ego, I can't get rid of the dukkha. And if somebody tells me this, oh, I don't like it, you know, I mean, or I am in a bad mood. Yeah? That is the ego. When somebody says bad things about me and the defense comes up, that's the ego. No, I'm not like this. No, I didn't say it like this. Huh? And it's all defense. All defense mechanism of the kilesas who protect their ego. The more you cut down on the ego, the more you see it's only a shell. There's no substance to it. There is no ego, you know, in this whole universe. The more you cut down on the ego, the more you understand the laws of karma, the more you understand dukkha, the more you understand this working of this world, of samsara. Huh? And the more you feel sorry for the people who are trapped. How can they not know? Well, because they close their eyes, you know, and believe only what they see and what they hear and what they think. That's why they are trapped in this world. If they would open their eyes, you know, I mean, they would see, you know, everybody can see it. If they open their eyes. Huh? That's what the Lord Buddha also teaches, and that's what we normally in the morning and evening chant praise, you know, upanayiko. open your eyes and see for yourself. That means we are all blind. So, if you don't want to be blind, you know, and if you want to get rid of the dukkha, I mean, keep the precepts. I mean, that's not a question. If you're not sure it's within the precepts, don't do it. Only if you're sure that it's within the precepts, then go ahead and do it. But don't forget to examine it as well. Has it good results or bad results? Is the feeling while you're doing it, is it a good feeling, it's a peaceful feeling, it's a nice feeling, and then go ahead and do it, or do it more often. If your heart is agitated, that means it's actually not a good action. I mean, you already know at the action, you know, if it's a good action or not a good action. But the way to the heart is very difficult. So all these obstacles, all these thoughts, all the past and the future. What am I going to do tomorrow? And what am I going to do in 1 month? Yeah? Now when I'm a monk for 5 years, I want to do this and I want to do that. All this, all that. And the past that weighs us down. Get rid of the past and get rid of the future. Just live in the present moment. I mean, and there you can start to open your eyes. Don't think about, you know, what this teacher said or that teacher said when you do your practice. Huh? When you dive into your practice, just open your eyes and see. Understand. See. See for yourself. Samadhi. You know, when I keep on Buddha, my mind gets quiet. That is seeing with the heart. And if I go on, you know, then the mind becomes more quieter and quieter. I mean, this kind of seeing, you can call it experience. I mean, the Buddhist path, you know, the Buddhist path of practice is the path of experience. I mean, it cannot be taught. And if it can be taught, you know, the way to deliverance, I mean, we wouldn't need to sit through all this pain and disgusting and ugly feelings. I mean, we just make the formula, we crack the formula, and then we are free. Now, the path of practice is the path of experience, just like we experience, you know, the way, you know, we learned how to walk, the way how we talk, you know. How many mistakes did we make, you know? Did we give up? No. Otherwise we wouldn't be able to speak. We didn't give up, you know, by learning to walk. Otherwise we wouldn't be able to walk. All these things we trained, you know, we put so much effort, you know, in the first 5 years, to educate or to train this body. So why can't we do the same thing with our mind? Because now we have this body, you know, trained already, you know. Okay, now let's use it for fun. Now, when we enter the Buddhist order, you know, then we have to retrain. And that is essential. I mean, and the older we are, the more difficult it is. Because it has been trained for 30, 40 or 50 years, you know, and then to retrain it, I mean, it's extremely difficult. But it can be done, no matter what. Look at Ajahn Chah, you know. Look at Ajahn Bua, you know. I mean, they have started with 60 years, you know. Had a family, had wife, you know, and then they got rid of it, and within 20 years they became arahants. So it can be done, even if they are old. Because it's only the body that is old, the mind is still young. With a lot of people, you know, especially also in the West, I mean, the older they get, the more rigid they get. And why do they get rigid? Because they get afraid. Get afraid to die. And they don't know what's happening after death. So they hold on to something, you know, that they think they understand that is what is going to happen. That's why they get rigid. I mean, they have to have a belief, you know, and the more you believe, you know, they start believing the same thing. I mean, the more solid it seems, the more the secure it seems. Huh? And then they will be surprised at the time of their death, you know, that actually what they believed is was all wrong. And then they really don't go into a dive. Because all what they've done, you know, they realize it, you know, has been wrong. Or lots of it has been wrong. And only a few things have been good. So do you think, you know, the way of getting rid of our ego is by being stingy, you know, or being respectless, or having no gratitude? Do you think that is the way? I mean, prerequisites for practice, I often mention it, because it seems it's necessary to mention it. And that's why I also mentioned some of the things, you know, avasopanta. I mean, the Lord Buddha, you know, made it very clear, you know, that we do need a certain hierarchy of respect. So respect is of utmost importance. Gratitude is of utmost importance. That's not our right that we are here. It's not our right that we become ordained. That's nothing. We are born, you know, we want to be grateful for whatever is given. And that starts already on Pindapat, on alms round in the morning. Whatever the people put into the bowl, be grateful for what is given. I mean, if people give you nice things, be grateful. If people don't give you nice things, be grateful. For whatever is given, be grateful. If an opportunity is given, you know, be grateful. If somebody, you know, teaches you, be grateful. He doesn't have to do it. And you don't have any right, you know, from being taught. I mean, that happens to a lot of the monks, you know, a lot of the monks here in Thailand. Right? They don't find a teacher that teaches them. You know, who looks after them. Some of them want, you know, but they don't have the good karma. The karma is that what leads us to the right person, that leads us to the right Dhamma expositions, that leads us to all sorts of right things. The good karma that we have acquired in the past. And the bad karma leads us to the wrong people. That's where we end up. So we will find a teacher that, you know, if in our previous lives, I mean, we knowingly have fooled other people, you know, I mean, we will be fooled. It's very easy. If you understand karma like this, you know, what don't do unto others what you don't want others to do unto you. I mean, then you have already a very basic understanding of karma. Because whatever we have done, I mean, will come back to us in one way or the other. So whatever we are doing now will come back to us. If it's good action, it will come back to us. I mean, it doesn't happen tomorrow. I mean, it might not even happen in this life or in the next life, but it will happen. Because karma is created and it will come back. And it just needs its time to run. So whatever we do good, you know, will come back to us as good. Whatever we do bad, with bad intention, will come back to us as bad. And the intention is the thing that creates karma, not the deed itself. I explained that quite a few times. No? It's something, you know, if you help somebody, you know, because you get money for it, you know, it's not the good karma that you created, you know, when you go to work and, I don't actually want to do it. You don't create any good karma with that. Actually, you create just the adverse effect. No? A nurse that helps people or nurtures people, you know, who has a grudge against her patients, no? Or a doctor, you know, helps people. I mean, a doctor or a nurse, you know, who is just there to help patients. I mean, they create lots of good karma. But if they have a grudge against, you know, their own work, you know, or do it for the wrong reasons, they don't create this good karma. They actually create adverse karma. But other people don't see it. They think it's good, you know. Because we have wrong view, because we don't understand things as they are. Intention is that creates a karma. So, I mean, so if you get angry, you know, if you think I make you angry, you know, don't let the anger out. Because the anger comes from you. It's your anger, and you have to deal with it. To let it out, you know, it just makes it worse. I mean, you might not be able to help not to show it, you know. I know when you're angry. I can see it. But as long as you don't put it into action, you know, I don't mind it. But the moment you put it into verbal action, you know, or physical action, I do mind it. So don't let it out, you know. I do train you. You know? And that, of course, you know, will hurt our pride. So when it hurts the pride, you know, realize, you know, there's pride, there's ego, there's wanting, there's will. And realize it, you know, and then let go of it, or try to let go of it, or don't cling to it. That's the best thing, for you to do. Or, you know, if you come then to the next higher state, you know, be grateful. Ah, you showed me something that I wasn't aware of, thank you. That's the best way, you know, how you can take any kind of corrections that are made. But that is not an easy thing, you know, because our defense mechanism comes out instantly. No, you know, oh, I did it, you know, or the excuses come up. Oh, I did it because of this or this or that. Oh, I thought this or that. Yeah? That's our defense mechanism. That's where we see the ego at work. I mean, we can't see the ego at work, you know, just looking at why we're doing something. But we can see it, you know, the moment, you know, something offends us. Or we are unhappy with the situation. That's where we see the reaction. So be at the reaction, you know, and then just look at the reaction and then don't react to it. Don't pull it out, you know. See at the thing that comes actually before the action. Look at that fireball that is in your heart, you know, and then just watch it. And because of it, it's anicca, you know, it has to go. Whatever comes into motion, you know, will disperse. Whatever arises, you know, will cease. I mean, that's the beauty of this world. There's nothing that is stable. There's nothing that's constantly changed. Our feelings change constantly. The weather is also changing constantly. The situations are changing constantly, but we try to make it constant, and the more constant we try to make this world, I mean, the more problems we have with this world, because it just doesn't fit to our views. Wood breaks apart, you know, okay, that's the nature of it. You know, people die, you know, that's the nature. The economy will change, you know, that's the nature of it. But if you hold on, you know, to this has to succeed, you know. Because it succeeded 20 years ago, I mean, now it's not the time that it will succeed. It has changed. So if you can stay, you know, with an open mind, I mean, we'll see how things are changing, and we see what is proper and not proper. We see what is working and not working. Huh? We don't need to study that in books, in economic books or whatever. We just see how it's working. We see the situation of the world. But for that, we can't have any opinions and views on it. We just see it. That works. That doesn't work. But we, you know, normally we are so we want to press everything into a certain scheme. And the more we press it, the more we have dukkha. This should be like this. This should be like this. A monk should behave like this, a monk should behave like that. And then we see a monk that doesn't behave like this, you know, and we don't call him a monk, or we don't respect him as a monk. But maybe he was doing the right thing. How do we know? Maybe he had a pure intention. Maybe he had good intentions. But because of our perception, of our wrong perception, I mean, we perceive it as wrong. How can you know? Ask yourself constantly, how do you know? Maybe he's okay. Just be in a state, you know, where you're not sure of what your assumptions, you know, and the assumptions will break down. The more, the surer you are of your assumptions, the more they're forming a hindrance in your practice. So be more diligent in your practice. Huh? Put more effort in, you know, try to get down to samadhi. Huh? Try to get down to the path of the heart. The moment you reach the path of the heart, or once you see the path, the heart is open, I mean you will have something. Yeah? Once you have a steady go to the heart, I mean there are little problems compared to the problems that people have in the world that have completely closed off the heart. I mean, they don't even know where it is located anymore. Okay, and with this I end the talk. Question? Problems in your practice? It's not the body that hurts. It's the citta that hurts.
I have difficulties to fight sleepiness while sitting. When I cannot do chankram, if it's raining or something, then it's quite hard, but this, from my previous experience, when I have more sati, then it becomes very easier to cut down on sleepiness. But when I don't have so much sati, I don't have tricks.
Well, I mean, when do we have sati? When we are interested. Mm-hmm. You're just not interested.
Yeah.
So you have to arouse your interest.
Like determination.
And yeah. I mean, the moment you're interested, you know, on every facet of your breath or any facet of the Buddha, I mean, you instantly have sati. But because, you know, it's monotone, you know, I mean, you get disinterested and you just want to pass the time. Or there's some painful feelings you're not even aware of that you want to avoid. That's why you fall into a certain state of dullness. I mean, dullness can fool us, you know, in thinking everything is quiet. But that is not sati. That's not this pure awareness of knowing what is going on. I mean, just know the thought, you know, before you drop away, you know, and you will be clear of your intention. You don't even know your own intention. I mean, have enough intention, you know, just make yourself, you know, before I drop you, or Nick, you know, my head, you know, goes down, I want to know, you know, who makes the head go down, because it must be an intention.
I'm aware of the feeling, like around the eyes and feeling of heaviness, this kind of thing, but the intention...
Yeah, and then before you're aware of the heaviness, I mean, what is heaviness? Then, I mean, instantly question it. Huh? What does it mean, you know, feeling tiredness behind the eyes? What does it mean? And that is what your interest arouses. And then instantly you are back again. I mean, the question, what is this? You know, what is this kind of feeling? Well, it's pain, you know. And then instantly, this is pain, you know, you want to get rid of it. What is pain, you know? Wow. That's interesting. Let's investigate pain. Huh? Oh, I'm so tired, I can't concentrate, you know. What is this? Tired. What actually does it mean, tiredness? Who is tired? The body is not tired. It's a chitta tired, you know, being constantly forced, you know, to just to do Buddha, 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 or observe the breath. The chitta is tired. It's not the body that is tired. It's not the body that is in pain, you know, it's the chitta that is constantly in pain. The moment we catch it, you know, the moment we know it, you know, the interest is there, and with interest there, I mean, we have sati, and with sati there, I mean, the kilesas have no rule over us. Then instantly that problem is solved. I mean, learn it. You know, you have to know what is going on. That's what I was talking about, you know, half of my talk. Know what is going on. You know, open your heart, you know, and just see what is going on. There's this thought, there's this intention, there's that. You know? I mean, if you don't get to the intention, at least see the thought. I mean, the intention sounds like a thought, you know, it looks like a thought, but, you know, it's much more subtle. But we can track it back, you know, we see the thought and track back to the intention.
We can track back afterwards? Yeah. In the present? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the moment you see this thought, track it instantly back, you know, what was the intention? Huh? If you don't know it, it's okay. Don't assume anything. Huh? If you know it, that's fine. If you don't know, it's fine. We only want to know, we only want to understand, we don't want to assume the wrong things. Huh? If you remember it, you know, if you remember the intention, if there was enough awareness, you will remember the intention. If there wasn't enough awareness, you won't remember the intention. Huh? So don't beat yourself up, you know, just know it. Okay, I know it or I don't know it. Yeah? Don't think about it. I mean, this retraction is not thinking about something, it's just recalling. Recall. Huh? Understand that? Richard? It's recalling, it's not thinking about what happened before. Huh? You just ask the question, what happened, you know, and then, I mean, either it comes or it doesn't come. If it doesn't come, forget it. If it comes, it's good. Huh? I mean, in the beginning it might come very blurry, you know, and then just take this blurry. Don't try to interpret, you know. I mean, you have a mixed feeling about your intention. Okay, then just realize this mixed feeling about the intention and say, and tell yourself, next time I want to get it clear. And then the moment you go, and then, you know, and it doesn't take more than 5 minutes. So, okay, put, you know, and then what comes? Oh, breath. I mean, and then be aware, you know. For 5 minutes you can be completely aware, huh? And then see what is going on. If you don't understand what is going on, I mean, you miss the experience and you have to do it over again. So if that happens again, okay, now do it over again. Do it over again. Don't give up. You can't help, you know, that these things happening. Huh? But you can prepare yourself, you know, that they are not going to happen in the future if you have sati. Do you understand that, Pierre? Yeah. I mean, be interested, you know, without interest, you know, this whole meditation is going to have no effect. Interest is the same as sati. I mean, it spurs, you know. What the hell is going on? I'm constantly asking myself, you know. What the hell is going on? Huh? And that instantly, you know, 100% sati. Oh, look at this, look at that, look at that. Yeah? This is followed by this, that is followed by that, that is followed by that. Huh? Just looking at it, not interpreting. Not assuming anything, not making something out of it. Just this interest. Huh? What the hell is going on? Who is going, you know, who's telling me to do this? Yeah? Who's telling me that I'm tired? Huh? That's the interest that spurs, you know, that spurs our practice, you know, and gives us so much energy. Because the moment we ask this question, we have the energy, the Dhamma has the energy, and the Kilesas have nothing. Hmm? Understand that, man. So we have to be, you know, we have to be in the power of it, you know. We have to grasp. Ah, that's the opportunity. Okay, I just nodded off, you know. Ah, no. Because somebody noticed that you nodded off, you know, then take the opportunity. Huh? What the hell is going on? And then instantly, you know, you're awake. Fully awake. So you have to grab the chances. I mean, when you look at it, you know, I mean, it's just like Lukta Mahabodha describes it. It's this fight for the throne. The throne has the control over all the five khandhas. Hmm? And the darkness or the kilesas fight together with the Dhamma. But the most time, you know, the just the kilesas sitting on the throne and telling, oh, I'm tired. I already practiced 14 hours. No wonder, you know, I should go to sleep. Yeah. That means the kilesas are on the throne. And the Dhamma, you know, is lurking in the back, you know, and if you don't raise it, you know, I mean, the Dhamma is like, what is tiredness, huh? Oh. Never ask myself, what is pain, you know? That's how you get into pain investigation, that's how you get into all these kinds of investigation. What is fooling me constantly? Hmm? What made me get up, you know, from my meditation seat? Just to know that. And the more you know it, and the more often you do it, I mean, the more aware you have to become. Just like being dull people. Yeah? I'm with dull people, I don't want to waste my energy. Yeah? Born to be dull and die to be dull. Or duller, even. Yeah? Now get the interest, get this. Yeah? I mean, you want to overcome dukkha. I want to overcome dukkha, you know. So I lay in my hangmat, you know, and wait until dukkha is gone. Huh? Well, then lay 24 hours and you will feel enormous dukkha if you don't move. Huh? Some monks did it, you know, trained it like that. Okay, you want to lay, you know, okay, now you lay for 3 days without moving a single thing. Huh? That's extreme dukkha, just like sitting down. That's how you speed up the kilesas. That's how you infiltrate them. Because they're constantly suggesting, that would be better, that would be better. Yeah? Not test them out, they're constantly lying. Because the kilesas, in the end, you will realize the kilesas have not the slightest clue about what is happening. They just throw up suggestions. That would be nice, yeah, it had worked in the past, you know, and in the offer you've done it, you know, I mean. But actually they don't know. They don't understand anything what is happening. I mean, they don't even understand the law of anicca, anatta, and dukkha. They don't understand it. And then they still think, you know, there's something, there's an entity within us, you know, that makes us doing these things and that thing. And because of their not understanding, that's why they lead us into these difficult states or deprived states. The moment they start to understanding, they will lead us to a happy state. So the interest, 100% interest is 100% sati. Know that. So pull up these questions, you know, they have to be coming out like shooting instantly, you know, you see something, it's just like shooting out of a pistol. Shoot them off with an interesting question. No? Try it out. Okay, more questions. Don't think. Huh? Think only putto. It's the only thing that's allowed. But you will see, I mean, this ordination procedure will, I mean, completely destroy any kind of practice that you have built up so far. Because you have to worry about this, and there's no measure against it. I mean, certain things, I mean, you have to just to worry about or just to do. So do it mindfully as much as you can. See the distress that takes place. And the distress only comes, you know, if you want to do it in a certain way or if you want to happen in a certain way. So, no more questions? Okay. Close it off.